Herbert and Jennifer Hart on November, what did we say? The
8th?
November 7th, 1989, University College, Oxford. We're talking about the period between 1946 and the early 50s. I think the period between your return to Oxford and his marriage, in effect. Mm-hmm. Can you describe, and either of you, and perhaps you to begin with, you teach with him, how do you see him socially after the war?
Oh, so when he was married?
Mm-hmm. No, before he's married.
Well, okay, he would have one to lunch at All Souls. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, he came, we lived in New College Lane. He came into our house when he was at New College. He came into our house a great deal.
We lived at New College Lane. There's a beautiful house, 18th century house on your left. If you come around the curve, we lived there.
Yeah. Yeah. And so he was in and out quite
a
lot.
In and out,
quite a bit. Yes, he was.
Is he interested at all in your children?
No.
Doesn't dislike them.
He wasn't hostile.
Let me try an impression out on you. Stephen Spender said to me that after the war, a lot of people began to worry about Isaiah, the sense that the monologues were becoming longer, the sense of talking all night was becoming slightly pathological.
He's a
person.
I had the sense that he was unsettled and hated being a bachelor fellow. He then asked you to find him a wife, and he suggested you might one of your sisters might do. Yes, very well, certainly did, yes. No, he was looking for a wife. He wouldn't have made any steps, but he did, certainly did say how much of it. And he obviously didn't want to be a bachelor living in college for the rest of his life, could have hated it. I'm sure it began really to hate it.
Mm. And did he talk to you about that?
He would let off occasionally, but not in any sort of plaintive way, but just saying, yes, he did say, what about one of Jennifer's sisters? He said to me.
Was he friendly with your sister, Judith?
No.
Was there any period in which he came between the two of you, in which his friendship for you came between the two of you, in which Isaiah was a source of strain in your?
No, I didn't think so.
No.
No.
No. Like a trio, obviously. Mm.
Yes. He warned me off against you originally. I don't remember. Yes, earliest stage.
Before we married.
Just before we were sitting down to live together, he said, you ought to beware, for what she likes is making people feel uncomfortable.
Really?
Something in it, too. And prickly, she was.
Acid.
You ought to beware.
Yeah.
He said this. When I imagined him, said this 20 years later, he's not embarrassed.
Yes, because he can be him.
But he did, definitely warn him.
Yes.
I told him at the time.
Yes, I think that's part of the story too. Mm-hmm. Well, I think he thinks I'm hypercritical. Mm-hmm. And as always, I'm saying, don't despise me for this and don't think I'm morally weak.
Yeah.
Also, the communist past, I think, must have reflected on it. It's very empty.
Well, I think he thought it was rather ludicrous. Incidentally, when when I was in the party and hanging around in Oxford, they said, and the people knew him fairly well, not terribly well, they said, couldn't I recruit him as a member? Mm-hmm. I said, I thought it was very unlikely.
Why did you think it was so unlikely? Here was a man who was writing a book about Marx, he had a Russian Jewish past. I mean, it's not the wildest possibility that he could be interested.
Well, partly he would have thought it was all ludicrous. I mean, there's a tremendous strand in him of thinking things are ludicrous.
Yeah.
And, well, I don't know really exactly why I did, but I certainly did think it was highly unlikely. Well, to begin with, I don't think he went in for political action. If you're a member of the Communist Party, even if you're Stephen Spender, I think you're expected to do something.
Stephen is only a member for 4 days.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
And that was one of the things I liked about it, the sense, I mean, if you belonged to the Labour Party, no one allotted you a job and said, look, this is what you're doing, this is how you're going to advance. Of course, if you're in the Communist Party, there were so few of us, of course. But you were given a niche and told, this is what you've got to do, and this is what you've not got to do also.
Yeah.
And I couldn't see Azar fitting into that sort of structure.
Yeah. But that means, in a sense, he didn't have the temperament of a true believer. I mean, just temperamentally, beyond politics.
A true believer in what?
In a cause of that sort.
Well, he didn't believe in the cause of communism, clearly.
But any cause?
Well, he believed in the cause of anti-fascism, and liberty.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, he believes, he's got passionate convictions. Mm. Mm.
I want to move to a more other personal terrain. At what point did you become aware that, you know, Professor Halban and his wife had come to Cambridge and
we were in, how did we got invited up there quite a lot?
We knew them very well. Curious enough, I was at school with Ali in Paris.
Yes.
But that was just coincidentally. I don't know, we got to know the Halbans, as they were.
We used
to go there a lot.
I think we were introduced to Hans by Azar, actually.
And we used to ride Hans's horses.
Hans had horses here.
And he rode them. He behaved fantastic, by the way. He behaved like a Cossack. He would have these lovely horses. I used to go out and ride. And he would ride them to a cornfield, across the corn.
Because it stimulated them, tingled them, so they went faster.
Must have stimulated the farmers who owned the fields.
Well, he owned the fields too, I think.
I thought this really put me off. Trampling down perfectly good corn.
Yeah.
And we never really liked Hans, I'm afraid, but I suppose we sponged on him a bit. Anyway, the horses were great.
Why didn't you like Hans?
Oh, he was coarse, I thought. I didn't like him at all. I thought he was rather coarse, didn't you?
Of course, not in the sense of coarse jokes.
No, sentiments, of course.
He was rather pathetic in a way. He felt an outsider. He always wanted you to explain to him about how Oxford worked. Well, in a way, that was fair enough, but it became a bit of a bore. But he had a chip on his shoulder about not being traditionally part of Oxford.
But he had the sense of Ali then, sort of disconsolate from the background.
Yeah.
I don't know. I had a very feeble grasp of what it was like. But I didn't like him.
You never met him, did you?
No.
I didn't like his jokes. I didn't like him. But I rode his horses.
And we went to dinner there.
And they were at Headington.
They had another house.
They had several houses. They had one right out at Barton where he owned this land.
Yes.
I think that was a small house. They started there in a more modest way. And then they moved to, not the present Headington house, but the house at the top opposite Pullman's Lane. And then he bought the Headington house.
And did he buy that?
Yes, I remember him showing me around it and saying how grand it was.
That's lovely, of course.
And soon after that he was dismissed.
He was dismissed?
By Ali.
Oh yes, yes, sorry. Yeah. When were you aware of Isaiah's feelings for Ali?
Not until I was out to me, I think.
And when was that? I mean, how?
I don't know. It was a rather painful moment because he said, I'm going to marry Ellie. And he said, you thought her a great bore, didn't you? So I said,
I think I'd said so.
Before I knew it was a thing.
Yeah.
Mm. quite like trips to the rest of it.
No. But in other words, you did not find out about this affair until he told you he was going to get married?
Yes, I'd heard, I think, from Stuart that they were having an affair together on some holiday, and that he was teaching me things that he hadn't learned before. I think from Stuart, somebody. But I had no detail about it.
I thought we were told we went to a senior lunch in June 19. We married was in 55, and Lionel Butcher or someone said to us, "Don't you? I was going to get married."
Oh, well, that might be the actual marriage.
I think that's right. I see your button.
As I've ended, sort of, say something to me about say something.
Well, he was a bit apprehensive in a way,
yes.
Leaving also, and a bit intellectual, and although he was in some ways depressed about living in college. But
also starting a sexual experience while relation with that.
Yeah. Did he talk to you about that at all?
He said one or two things, yes, but I didn't ask my class, I didn't have much to give. But, yes.
Did he talk to you about those matters?
No.
Stuart talked to me more about their side of their, of their thing. By saying that some such remark about Isaiah had very puritanical standards about that to begin with, and that Adam succeeded in relaxing those. Yes, that's Stuart made that remark.
So he gets married. Were you at the wedding?
Yeah, where was it?
I'm suddenly realizing I'm not sure. I think it's in London. In
the synagogue.
I'm not sure. Anyway, you're not there. What do you then begin to notice about him as a consequence of his marriage? How does marriage change him? And when do you begin to notice it?
I think he was calmer, I think, as a result of settling down. Not faced with being a bachelor, federal rule, so it's the rest of his life, which is a terrible thing.
Well, I think initially we saw very much less of him because he moved up to Kennington Hill. And I think inevitably Alan didn't want him spending an awful lot of time in also with his pal. And we did see less of him at first, I think. Way of life being built.
Do you think that Eileen possibly felt some jealousy towards either of you or both
not
of you?
Not personally, but wasn't jealousy, but one or two occasions when not only we, but some other of our friends were together up there. She said to us, "Now, here's all your old friends joining." There was a touch that.
Well, inevitably she gets very bored about talking about the 30s, which is terribly important in his life, and he loves reminiscing about all the endless people one meets on and various goings on and so on. But I think she felt a bit diffident, and she felt all these people were very clever, and that, although she's obviously very able, she hasn't had a stringent academic training in the way that the rest of other people had. And as I used to say to me, do be nice to her and make her feel part of things. I think he saw there was a bit of a problem, naturally.
But he changed in other ways. He became a wealthy man, to put it, to be vulgar about it, although that clearly wasn't what was important to him about getting married.
I don't, yes, somehow, I don't know if it's romantic or it's just, I feel that made almost no difference.
What do you think?
Well, I think at times I have felt it made a difference, partly because there's a kind of, a clique of wealthy people. But most of our friends now are pretty wealthy people. And they, some people they only know because they're wealthy. And I think this does make a certain barrier. I mean, they can't actually stay in houses, I suspect, where there isn't a private bathroom. They're reduced to, so they have to stay with us, which they don't get a private bathroom. And I think it has cut him off a bit, but not as much as some people would think.
Yes, I think she had a problem that she felt she must not upset the boat by walking into a house, which was quite unused to entertaining or having people with that amount of money. So.
Yes.
And she's slightly reluctant to come to one's house because I think she almost likes slumming, which is a bit embarrassed by what she used to and how to behave. I also think they developed a London life as a result of the marriage, much bigger London. And they met then a lot of new people, really. I don't think really through her connections, but in a sense just through having money. In various circles, some of them were intellectual, interesting, but some of them I think were much more London society, and then they consort with the monarchy a bit more, that sort of thing. At times, I think, if we are being critical at all, this has had some effect on Isaiah. I think his political views moved a bit to the right, and he became a bit more establishment, don't you know? But at the same time,
yes,
there's always a tremendous basis of the old Isaiah. It's very much there. The other thing has been, I think, a bit marked.
What do you think? Do you think that's true, that account?
Yes, I think so. Yes. How much it weighs and it has weighed.
I've
occasionally come away, I don't know whether from Karaji or from some party, thinking, how can you bear to know such all these awful people? But not very marked, not very often.
One of the other things that happens to him in his 50s, in the 1950s, is that he begins to become famous in some sense. I mean,
yes.
He begins to become.
Yes, so much so that in America, if people ask me if I know him, I usually say I don't, because they're all thought to be boasting.
That's in the past, this is.
When do you begin to notice that he's becoming famous? I mean, that he's becoming prominent, that he's becoming a sort of public figure in some sense, and
yes.
No longer just a very clever and interesting friend of the Don.
Yes. I don't know, it's so hard to put it later on it. You can't pick up a newspaper, you have to speak about seeing from reference to the last time. I don't really couldn't put a date, I've been thinking.
But is this more the 50s or the 60s?
I'm afraid my memory is too limited. It never obtruded much of any, so I never thought it was too important.
It didn't intrude in your friendship?
No, not at all. Not at all.
What do you feel about his, I mean, we're now moving slightly away from the biographical to more general, but what do you feel about this, his public reputation as a sage?
But he's amongst his many qualities, he's got that to be wise, I think. just perceived Jews. And if that's what perceived means, I think it's okay.
I don't know.
I think all the public pronouncements he's had to make, which have had weight because of his position, have been good, I should have thought. And I can't believe they are. He said no.
Well, when he writes, when he's joined writing various letters to the Times, yes. Which he's normally reluctant to do, but occasionally he's probably got to speak as well.
Yes.
I
think it's marvellous that a person of that degree of intelligence and academic attainment should have some kind of position in which the world at large, and the ignorant of all these things, will attribute importance to.
Has there ever been, a political occasion or an issue has come up where you feel he's rather funked it? I mean, he just hasn't kind of...
It's tremendously, you see, we were all working to get Mrs. Thatcher denied her degree. Eisenhower thought it was absolutely wrong.
Yes.
You know, she's denied her degree.
Yeah.
And that was successful, largely not to left-wing people or people in class, but to the scientists. Who for the first time in their life trooped down from their labs to vote against her and did. Eisenhower thought this was folly and that we should regret it, and has constantly said since, don't know how much money you've lost the university by doing this. He's always kept on his mind. And has never seen the idea that it's worthwhile making a stand and give other people, encourage other people. It's a real protest against the worst things he's done since through education, much of it through education. So it's a real difference.
Did you have a kind of face-to-face argument on that subject?
I put up this card.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
That is friendly, so to speak. Also, I mean, he goes to meals at the Diamond Institute in the course of the day. Criticising about it, teasing about it.
Would you accept invitations to dinner at Diamond Institute?
No, of course not. Except as a communist spy.
Yes, that's when you would be tempted to rejoin the party.
Yes.
File a full and complete report.
Yes.
People have reproached him, for example, for rather funking the issue of Israel, that is, for being, in fact, a quite liberal, moderate character in the climate of Israeli opinion, and critical of the government, and yet perhaps more silent than he should be on what the Israelis should do toward Palestinians, for example.
Yes.
Have you ever felt that?
He once reproached me, and I was rather furious, for signing a letter with Strawson and Ferdier saying about what was going on. And he, Oppenheimer here, do you know him?
Peter Oppenheimer.
No. He attacked me, and Isaiah joined in.
Publicly?
In his drawing room.
No.
And Oppenheimer began by saying, I see you've joined up with the anti-Semites. So they're angry about it. Attacking me, you're attacking me. So I got angry. But Isaiah rather joined in, and not angry. It's the only thing. I think that's the nearest to a brush that I would call it.
My attention may have slipped for a second. Yes. What was the issue over which that conflict was momentarily?
I signed a letter which Peter Strawson and...
Yes, I followed that bit, but what was the subject of the letter?
I think the behavior, some kind of repression on the West Bank.
Right.
I can't now remember.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
This would have been a couple of years ago.
Yes, 2 years.
I mean, quite recently.
Yes. No. And I did get on.
Because I think one.
Well, one would get angry if someone says you've joined the part of the anti-Semites, even
well,
in jest.
That's what wrong about Isaiah didn't say that. No. Did.
Yes, but what did Isaiah say?
Well, when I complained about it, I said I took my measures. I don't care for Oppenheimer or what he thinks. He said you're wrong. He's got quite good judgment.
Mm.
So I thought.
He's always willing to say you're wrong. You're saying that reminds me of one. Constantly does say that to one.
Isaiah?
Yes.
Yeah, we'll say you're wrong. Yeah.
Yes, I mean, that's one of the
but
great things.
Some dimension of this quarrel, and I can't now remember. Yeah, there's a response. Frostmutter is a quarrel.
Because he doesn't much believe in the way.
Oh, I tell you what. It's a letter, it's coming back. And this is why Delphi Isaiah had made an extraordinary mistake, or not a damaging one. The letter was saying there should be negotiations, and I put in to the letter there should be negotiations and a settlement, an international settlement, in which both Russia and the United States should be the parties.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned this to myself. And I was going to sign this and put in the point that we must be on the footing of the great powers of the parties. Isaiah said, okay. And then, later, when the letter was published, he'd forgotten to have this conversation with me, I think I had. Then Oppenheimer, his president, raised it and said, you've joined the anti-Semites.
I see. Mm.
And I forgot to remind Isaiah. I told him.
Yes, it's a puzzling disagreement because lots of Isaiah's public positions would sound rather like the ones that you just said you supported.
Yes. Yes.
What I was trying to say was that, going back to one of the questions you asked, in a way he believes much less in public actions or public announcements than going behind the scenes and knowing all the right people and getting it.
Stuart
I
also.
I don't mean in a nasty way, fixed. But
to go back to the Stuart Hampshire also joined in and said, because they're hostile to radio for obvious reasons, and said, well, what does he know about? What is Herbert now? He said this to us now about the situation that Israel's got to face.
Yeah.
And he had no right to say that.
Stuart said that. That's surprising.
Well, it's partly because Freddie Ed said it.
Yeah.
So we had a bit of a quarrel.
Yeah.
But I didn't clinch it as I ought to have done, but I mentioned the 3 weeks ago, and you said it was okay as the one that you put.
Yeah.
The, any settlement must be 1 inch.
The great powers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the nearest I think I've come to a quarrel.
Mm.
Or feeling angry.
Yeah. There's been no other period in your life or your friendship with him where you felt kind of strain or difficulty or.
No, I don't think so.
No.
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 And you?
No.
That was what?
Yes. I mean, we disagree on some political things. I mean, for instance, I'm CND and he just says, you're pretty stupid.
Yes.
But he's very loyal, Isaiah. He likes the concept of little prince.
Yes,
and the fact that we both know him for quite a long time.
Yes.
So I haven't known his long as had it. I think, in a sense, counts with him.
Oh, it's very clear to me that you'd rank very near the top.
No, I wasn't really speaking personally, but I meant to just, he is loyal to old friends.
Right. And actually, the number, when I asked him who should I talk to among, you know, he knows thousands
of people.
The number of people he actually listed were very small.
Yeah.
And there are only about five people he said you really ought to talk to, and you were you and Stuart Hampshire and Stephen Spender and a very few of them.
There's a good thing called David Cecil is dead.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Very important to him.
Yes.
Yes.
Of course. quite often the Berlins say they've got no friends. It's one of their terms. Very popular, you know.
Yeah.
We're trying to produce lists of friends.
Lists.
Yeah. Speaking of lists, we get to one of the things that I think you regard as a kind of minor defect: the lists and the monologues.
Yes.
What is it about that that bothers you?
Well, I guess a bit. Sometimes the lists are the same.
Yes.
And anyhow, I don't know what's the... it doesn't seem to advance conversation to have that. So
yeah.
Speculating about who...
How many homosexual fellows there are in All Souls. Yes. Or in
or conductors or something less important. But less material sometimes. So. Yes, and this thing which he goes in for quite a lot about who is the greatest living historian.
Yes.
And you produce various people and they're all eliminated. It's a great eliminator. Constantly gone now about people no good. If you mention someone, you think they've done something good. Oh, he's no good at all. I get rather angry. I tell him he's totally dismissive, much too often.
Yes.
There's no one left, really.
Yes. He can be. I fear the back of his hand sometimes.
Yes.
I mean, I fear... do you ever... He's sometimes accused of being a gossip.
Don't mind that. I don't know.
Well, he's interested in personal relations, in that sense.
Yes.
It's not malicious gossip, is it? He's always very clear who he can say what to.
Mm.
And just go around indiscriminately.
Yes.
He sometimes appears overconfident, dusty, in some point or case, but he slaps his thigh. That's it.
Yes.
Which is wrong with that.
Yes, he says, I know, and I've met all the important people. And a little bit of this comes in.
And
it's
left-wing geese.
Yeah.
Geese.
Yeah.
I think Stuart's a goose at times. He thinks I'm a goose.
Yeah. And you think sometimes he just... What's the charge? That he lacks the courage of his convictions, or that his convictions are just very much to the right of yours, and therefore...
Well, I wouldn't say very much to the right.
I don't think he lacks the courage of his convictions at all.
No, certainly not that, no. And often he's very interested in moral problems, and he hasn't really highlighted that aspect of him, both in personal relations and in everything.
Yes.
He's always thinking of the morality of the... which is rather unusual, very often.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't say we were terribly far apart, politically, I suppose. But some of his attitudes are moved to the right a bit.
Well, that's...
Well, it was not being too much loose talk.
No, I'm just wondering, I mean, I could ask you all kinds of more general questions about him, but I think for the moment that's probably where I should be. But I'm just wondering whether there's any other story, moment, anecdote, vignette about him that you'd want to put on record, or some aspect of his life that we haven't touched on.
Also, but I did write down a few things. Initially, I think we mentioned the whole Israel thing. I mean, if you go there in his company, he's in a sense king of the Jews, and everybody comes, people pouring in to the King David Hotel where he was staying all day when he's free to see him. And he loves it. I mean, he drives me mad. He loves it. Also killed me.
Not because he's self-important.
No. He just loves business.
He's a very modest man, I think,
especially
in relationship, in relation to the status he's got. He thinks he's ludicrous very often.
Yes. Yeah, that's very charming and affecting side of it.
Yes, very important.
But he does love being...
A ceaseless activity to midnight every night. Kill me. I said that to him. He said, well, it's... If I stayed up, it would kill me. Don't you stay up and try and stop him.
But it's not because he's egocentric.
No, not at all. He just loves an activity at that point.
And he hates pomp and ceremony, and he's got a great sense that he is rather ludicrous, as he often talks about himself as chattering buffoon and that sort of thing.
The thing I've got down here, how excellent a chairman he was in that committee I set on for 10 years.
Yes. That committee, just again for the record, you said over lunch, it's the Rothschild
Fellowships, which are given to Israeli scholars to try to go abroad. Very generous, well funded thing by Israeli money, Rothschild money, was originally meant for religious purposes and was diverted. And that's been a beneficial one. And he chaired this brilliantly. He's just given it up. I gave it up 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And he was great, he was awfully good at making clear points to the persons being examined, dealing with the co-examiners and so on,
This is on weaknesses, sorry, it's nothing to do with this. Sometimes he dismisses people as being boring or insignificant when they're not really.
Can you think of an example, a particularly major example of that?
Well, I can't think of any major, but I know sometimes friends or acquaintances who have said, look, this is a very interesting, nice person, and he'll meet them and say, there's nothing to them. But I mean, usually he's very right about people, because one of his great things is getting inside people and seeing having a sort of belt on time. But there are times when they're dismissed because they haven't scintillated or produced an exciting idea immediately. There is an element of that, I think.
There's just one feature, except when he had a bad illness, and I think nearly kicked the bucket. I've never seen him depressed. Mm. Have you?
Yes, I think
not depressed. It's not his thing.
I think he was a bit depressed in New Cottage by about 1950.
Really? But not, he wouldn't sit and he doesn't. Mm-hmm. But he had a very bad illness and he lost interest in everything. Fantastic, as Aline described it to me. He wouldn't read, he wouldn't talk.
When was this?
I should think he, for some lung thing, wasn't it? Mm.
Well, that the time when he went to hospital and walked very desperately. Mm. There's some years ago.
In the 1970s?
Yes. It wasn't the throat trouble.
No.
Some heart troubles.
Yes. Fibrillation, yes. Yeah. But I've never seen him in the ordinary way.
Depressed.
Never. I was with him in Israel once when he got a frightful attack of flu, and he just lay inert in bed and slept most of the time. Ali and then came out and recovered. But he wasn't then, he wasn't depressed. But the other thing he was. And Ali described it to me. He said nothing, couldn't get him to take interest in it for about 2 days. Mm-hmm. But apart from that, he doesn't seem to have the ups and downs.
Perhaps he's amused by himself.
He does seem to me have great equanimity of character.
Certainly.
Great steadiness of character.
Yes, certainly. And it's as if he fears nothing, not death. Can't understand him if he's afraid of death.
Well, partly because he's endlessly entertained, isn't he? He sometimes sees the funny side of everything. Situations being ludicrous, and this gets him along quite a long
way. But also, he's got a kind of basic equanimity. I mean, I think this absence and making fear of death is kind of extraordinary.
Has he ever talked to you about that?
Just mentioned it, yes, and not audaciously, of course. So I don't mind a bit, he says. I love life.
I did have two other questions I realised that have to do with his later Oxford career. I get a strong sense from him that he's pulled away from All Souls and feels in many senses disillusioned with the quality of the fellowship.
Yes, he is.
Can you date that or give a sense of how that emerged, or tell me what he's told you about it?
He very much thinks nobody's any good. In philosophy, for example, nobody seems rather tense since the great ones of his day. So he does run them down.
He's too dismissive.
He thinks nothing is sourcing, for example. It's a great mistake. And one wonders how much that is due to perhaps less than totally impressive personality.
He
doesn't pay too much attention to that. Doesn't weigh their intellectual gifts as he should.
Would you say the same of Parfit?
Of who? He's got an antipathy to Parfit. He does condemn, a negative thing, lots of people as being second rate and so on, and I'm pretty sure he hasn't read much of what he gets an osmosis. He smells a second rate character. And don't you think that?
Yes, I do, but it's very difficult to reconcile this with his general tolerance, because a lot of people talk about him being very tolerant and knowing lots of people and wanting to know lots of people. But there are both sides to him. But this thing about not reading, I remember sometimes being in his room and just pulls out a book and reads one sentence and then knows about this man.
Sometimes it works, but sometimes doesn't.
Sometimes
it leads him wrong.
I mean, some of the stuff he has written on Rousseau, and George Paul used to be very critical of him on Rousseau and on Locke. He really hadn't read the text properly. We would admit it, but he would say, well, it didn't matter, I know.
That is a great thing.
One that he admits to, that's what makes it slightly more complicated. He admits he's no scholar, never claims to be one. Although he's a better scholar than he possibly makes out. Some of the Russian work seems to me to have genuine scholarship in it. This is again jumping around slightly, but do you have any impressions of him in his time running Wolfson, being a
president? Tremendous success. Wonderful.
Why was he good at it?
What?
I say it's amazing in a way.
Yes.
Do you mean why? Do you mean how was he?
How was he a success, and then why was he a success?
He chaired the governing body.
Well, he got all that money in these fantastic buildings. Of course, Ali did a great deal in terms of choosing things.
By vitality, you impart a lot in the position of head of a college. We've got a chap here, a new master, who has tremendous vitality and radiates down. Probably some fallacy in this physical metaphor, but it does. And as I does spread a kind of making people feel it's worthwhile.
Well, there are all these scientists who've never met anyone remotely like him before, things he talked about, and were terribly excited and interested, and the whole thing went on. And he also saw, again, some of the ludicrous side of it, it's ultra-democratic also. He did put his foot down, on Congress.
He
suggested children should be members of senior Congress.
I hadn't heard that story.
I think something about that. But he didn't mind. It was, in some ways, organization was ludicrous. It was fantastically democratic, and 200 members would come to the meeting and something like that. I would just say, it's very funny, and they passed this resolution. It didn't really matter, things didn't go wrong. It was a dynamic new thing. It was a fantastic success, I think.
And it's marvelous to have somebody there who, if they're guests or something, you know that they won't be either bored or neglected. Marvellous.
Just going back to your thing about drawing away from ourselves, he is much less in academic life, of course, in the last few years than he used to be. The mere fact that he goes to London for 5 days a week does mean that he's not so closely connected.
That's right.
And he's because he works for the British Library and all, but his sort of social media is rather different than it used to be, I think this is true. But he's more critical of the fellows of all sales than his office, and maybe some ghastly reaction was than it used to be.
Well, why don't we leave it there? I'll just ask you one final question. I mean, this is your chance to say something about him that you would want to have him remembered for. I mean, what do you think he'll be remembered for?
What will he be remembered for?
Things like the hedgehog and the fox, I should have thought, which to me threw a lot of light. Many English people would see the points about Tolstoy's.
Do you mean remember before in terms of the writings or as a talker? It's open-ended.
It was open-ended.
Yes.
Well, the writing, surely, would you not agree that the things about particular people, Churchill and...
Yes. There's essays.
The essays.
These, I thought, would last
tremendously well.
But he'd be remembered as being an academic who had a fantastically wide approach to life and art, and enormously able to broaden people's horizons. I remember once Indian, I think it was, or was it an Israeli, who read some criticism of Isaiah and made some kind of mistake. He said, but the thing about Isaiah is he sets your brain on fire.
Yeah.